Morning on the Lady of the Lake plantation can be a grand experience, particularly in the late fall when the skies are clear blue and the wind is blowing in the swamp, Spanish moss lifting in the trees, and thousands of ducks quacking as they end their long journey to the south. However, in this era of trouble and woe, it is difficult to hold on to these poignant moments, as was the case last evening when our Christian invaders from the north lit up the sky with air bursts that disintegrated into curds of yellow smoke and descended on the grass and swamp in configurations that resembled spider legs. A twisted piece of hot metal landed no more than 10 feet from the chair in which I sat and the artist's easel on which I painted, but I did not go inside the house. I would like to tell you that I am brave and inured to the damage cannon fire can wreak on the bodies of both human beings and animals, but that is not the case. There's a mini still parked in my left leg, and I need no convincing about the damage Billy Yank can do when he gets up his quills. The truth is, I both fear the wrath of our enemies, as I fear the wrath of God, and at the same time wish that I could burn inside its flame and be cleansed of the guilt that I never thought would be mine. I went to Virginia in 61, with the 8th Louisiana Infantry and a promise from our officers that I would serve as a surgeon's assistant and never shed the blood of my fellow man. Oh yes, in my innocence, I was certain I would never bear the mark of Cain. Even if my superiors broke their pledge and ordered me to arm myself and fire into the ranks of boys against whom I bore no animus. I sawed limbs and stacked them in piles at 1st and 2nd Manassas, and especially at Sharpsburg, where the 8th Louisiana was mowed down in a cornfield near Dunker Church. Through a window, I saw these poor fellas fall, and I went into the fray and dragged them inside, north and south, the living and the dead, and prayed for all of us. Sharpsburg told us you do not have to die in order to go to hell. Then winter came, and we began to tire of the mud and the cold and the gray shortness of the days and the fact that the Yanks were not going to give it up and go home, as our leaders had told us. Unfortunately, an army that is not marching or fighting becomes restless and troublesome. I took a stroll along a stream in a snow-covered forest of bare trees and saw a fellow my age sitting on top of a boulder reading a book, a black felt hat tied down on his head, a gray blanket stiff with frost on his shoulders. A few feet away, a rifle was propped against a tree, a bayonet mounted on the tip of its barrel. The soldier on the rock was glued to his book, a collection of Robert Browning's poems. I had coffee beans and a tobacco pouch in my shirt pocket, and 2 tin cups and a half loaf of bread and a chunk of ham in my haversack. I also carried my Bible there. It was 1 week from Christmas. In the dreariness of this particular day, I thought how fine it would be to share my food and my scripture with a fellow soldier, one who loved the same poems as I, one probably aching to see his family, just as I was. If you want to gather some twigs and get a fire started, I have the makings of a holiday treat, I said. He didn't reply. His book was opened in front of his face, hiding his features, as though he were masked. I hope I didn't disturb you, I said. He lowered his book slowly. Then my gaze drifted to his rifle. It was a Springfield. In 62, Springfields were seldom seen among the boys in Butternut. I'm unarmed, sir, I said. He closed his book without putting a marker between the pages and set it beside him on the boulder, his face shadowed under the brim of his hat. He let the blanket slide from his shoulders and reached inside his coat. It was navy blue, with gold epaulettes sewn on the shoulders. He pulled a small revolver from his waist and leveled it at me. I mean you no harm, I said. He cocked the hammer with his thumb. Please, sir, I said, my voice breaking. There was no anger in his eyes, but there was no mercy either, or anything for that matter. Sir, I'll leave. I'm a surgeon's assistant. I'm not a combatant. I don't know if his hand was shaking or if the revolver slipped, but it fired nonetheless, and I felt the ball rip through the side of my coat. The Yankee officer seemed to startle his eye, but that did not stop him from continuing the accidental or wanton choice that would change both our lives forever. He aimed with both hands and pulled the trigger. The hammer snapped dryly on a dead cap. He looked dumbfounded or frightened, and I wondered if he had ever fired a shot in anger. I had no time, however, for analytical thoughts. My heart was thundering so loud I thought my head would come off. Then a creature inside me I didn't recognize took hold of both my body and my mind. "You bloody bastard," I said, running for the rifle. "You'll pay for that." He tried to cock the revolver with both thumbs, but I had a Springfield now, and I drove the bayonet into his chest, working it upward through bone and muscle and into a lung. I felt his weight curl over the blade, even as he tried to push himself off the blood groove with his bare hands, even as he slid to his knees, his eyes bulging as big and brown as polished acorns, his hands trying to clasp the rifle's barrel. But I wasn't finished. I pulled the bayonet from the initial wound and aimed at his heart and plunged it into him a second time and leaned hard on the stock until the tip of the bayonet exited his back and pinned him to the snow. His mouth opened slowly and formed a cone, as though he were resting. Then his arms flopped away from his body, like a crucified Christ. In his dying, he never uttered a word.